Welcome to Noise and Notes, WFPL's political podcast. I'm Philip Bailey, and today I have an interesting panel of media gurus. Terry Boyd is founder of Insider Louisville, an online news site founded in 2010. Thomas Nord is a former reporter and editor at the Louisville Courier-Journal, who now serves as chief spokesman for the Air Pollution Control District. And Gabe Bullard is WFPL's news director. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Good.
I wanted to ask, as a first question, this conversation is really about, and I think, Mr. Boyd, your news website really started the ball rolling on this conversation about people from journalism going into PR or becoming spokespeople. Thomas, let me ask you as a first question, because you're someone who has been on both sides of the fence here, some what people call, I guess, Gabe, the dark side. But how has the transition been for you going from someone who was a reporter and now you're a spokesperson for a city agency?
It's been difficult in some ways, but easier in other ways. Part of the reason I went into this form of public relations, working for a government agency that has the mission of air pollution control, we're essentially the arm of the EPA in Louisville. I was looking around for something different. I wanted to get out of journalism for a lot of reasons. I've been in it a long time, and I was looking for something different that I could use my skill set. But I didn't necessarily want to go into straight PR. I mean, I wasn't opposed to going into like corporate PR or public relations for like an agency. So I don't want to bash that idea. But when this job opportunity came along, I jumped at it because it felt like something positive that I could.
Now, we've all seen what's going on with the Courier. I think people recognize that certain financial situations are going on. The corporation Gannett, many people have been critical of its decision-making for a number of years in this community. Is part of it the fact that some just good journalists are being pushed out with layoffs, with poor pay? I mean, we're seeing a lot of people, and I think, Terry, you mentioned this on your website, going from the Courier into political spokesman or that nature. I mean, that has to be a part of it, right?
I think it's a big part of it. I'm not going to deny it. Last summer was a pretty turbulent summer at the Courier-Journal. I used to be the editor of Velocity Magazine, and Velocity Magazine is no more. And the day they, you know, kind of came without warning and the staff was laid off, I was reassigned to a different job. So it was a tough summer. And I'm not going to deny that that puts you out there looking.
Because you have a certain skill set. I mean, Terry, we have a group of people who have a certain skill set. They're really good at uncovering information. And it seems that a lot of the people who are really, really good at that are being recruited by those who maybe want to keep that information from getting out.
That was my point to the Post. You've got this one-way flow. How many people do you know who've left PR and marketing to go to journalism? Zero. How many people have left journalism to go to PR and marketing? I couldn't even keep track. Hell, when we had the that Post, people kept emailing me for days. You forgot this person, Mark Ebert, WHAS fine reporter. Now he works for U of L.
Probably one of the better reporters.
One of the better reporters who ever worked in this town.
Period. And
now
the city.
And part of Mark's job, whether he would admit it or not, is to leap over the truth. It is. It's to show those people, to show especially U of L's kind of suspect management, how to avoid being completely honest with the public. That's what he's paid to do.
Let's look at the couple of the hires. I mean, you had Kerry Richardson. She works for the governor. Former WHS reporter Chris Pointer, former Courier-Journal reporter. Worked for Abramson and for Fisher now.
Tony Hyatt.
I'd call Chris out. I think he's one of the people who's best at working the media because he knows how to do it. He knows how to put up all the obstacles. He knows exactly what he has to give and no more. And that's the tone, that's the tenor of what's going on in public relations. And it's because of former reporters.
I will say this. I've been at it for 6 months and I have not completely been sucked into. I mean, I do know that there is an aspect of this that people perceive people going into PR that they're there to put up roadblocks. Thus far, that hasn't been my philosophy. Thus far, I haven't been put in a position where I've had to do that.
But isn't it
the problem? The problem is Kerry Richardson. When I ask her a legitimate question, she just blows me off because I'm not a newspaper. She doesn't understand that my audience grows about 33% per month.
I will say that I've tried to be with Insider Louisville. I mean, I've tried to be very helpful when I can.
You've been great.
Yeah, and I think.
But isn't it fundamental though? I mean, the idea of you know, Thomas, that when a certain reporter calls or there's a certain line of questioning, your mind is already probably working from your previous experience of what is that person on to? What are they thinking?
That's the interesting thing. And with Terry's post, you had mentioned the tricks of the trade that journalists are taking into the PR world. And there are some of those, I think, that are being taught in PR programs now, likely by former reporters who went into PR and now
exactly.
are going into academia. But there's also, I think, an experience that you don't get by just learning the program, something you know from working in a newsroom, how to work on the other side of it. But something also that a lot of people, I think, may suspect when they see, you know, Mark Hebert quoted in a story about U of L now on the other side of things, is that also whenever an agency hires a respected reporter, they're also buying, at least in the short term, a certain amount of credibility.
No kidding.
It's somebody who is going
so
to be able to relate
now
to reporters.
Take it easy on other folks because, oh, I used to work with this person.
No,
or,
no.
I don't think
what
it's taking easy.
Is,
I think
if Mark
it's,
Hebert says it, it must be true because he's never lied to us before.
Right.
You get instant credibility when you hire Mark Hebert. Hebert's an excellent media relations person. Don't get me wrong. He's probably the most responsive and the most open that I deal with. Most of the reporters, the former reporters I deal with, are horrible. Horrible.
But you
flat
also get
horrible
when you hire him too.
That's how you really feel.
He's talking about me, isn't he?
No, actually, you're really great. But there are people who've left the career. No, I'd say the worst one in town was a former Business First reporter, and I'll name him. I have no problem with it. Eric Benmore. He worked for probably 15 years at Business First, and the day he left, he never returned a colleague's call. And now he works at Kindred.
Is there a corrosive element to this?
Well, I want to go back to the one thing. I think right. that you also get if you hire, U of L hiring Mark Hebert, they do have, you know, this instant trust in the community among people who know Mark Hebert. But also, in the short term, you do get, I think it throws reporters off a little bit. You get a little bit of disarming other reporters. Because when you go to these events and a former reporter is working as a spokesperson, you always hear some sort of, war story from time in the newsroom. There's a camaraderie there. It's an instant sort of trust that is purchased between the reporter and the organization that has hired a former reporter. Now, that doesn't always last because skepticism wins out.
If I can throw this out there, I'll tell you my personal experience, and all I can tell you is what I know personal experience is, that in my line of work in air pollution control, it's extremely technical stuff. It is a thicket of federal, state, and local laws. It's science, it's engineering, it's politics. And when James Bruggers from the CJ calls me, or Erica Peterson from FPL calls me, or Terry contacts me, I have to be on the ball. You cannot obfuscate with these people. In some respects, they know this stuff better than I do. Eventually, I'll catch up. But so I think that. Not to come back to what I was saying before, I think there are journalists out there when they do switch over, they do look for something that feels a little more positive than just going to work for, say, a tobacco company. You know?
Yeah, but my ideal is no gatekeeper. I want to talk to right. people who know. I don't want you between me and some engineer. Now I don't cover. Right. You're right. I don't understand pollution. I don't understand.
But you also
have
to understand the engineers too. These guys are. A lot. I mean, there's 70 people at our
agency.
You need
someone to translate. Cause
I would ideally look. I'm with Terry in the sense that I would love it if, in a perfect world, reporters could just call the people up directly. But I think that system would break down because those people are doing other things with their time. To have somebody at least, it's not translation because that sounds like, that's technically what I'm doing. I'm trying to help get them to the right person because if you don't cover APCD on a regular basis, you don't always know who the right person to call.
I agree 100%. But most media people spend their time making you jump through hoops, making you submit mm-hmm. questions ahead of time.
Oh,
and
yeah.
then what you get back is not right. an interview with a sort with a subject matter expert. What you get back mm-hmm. is a carefully crafted one-line email, and no one served right. well by that.
And that's not exactly. And I agree with you on that. That's not the way I want to do it. I think that if more PR people understood that this grates on reporters. I mean, I was a reporter.
But there are no more reporters. They know that. They understand that. And they don't care. And it's all of a sudden, we have no leverage.
It's like they're running out the
clock a little
bit.
Media has no leverage.
Right.
They're just, they understand that there's nobody who's going to really come at them.
Well, don't you think, Terry, that it's going to sort it?
Maybe Philip. Well, I don't know. You've roughed up the mayor pretty good, boss.
Well, let me ask Terry, do you think things will sort of sort themselves out? I mean, will there be a media on the other side of this that is strong enough? I worry about it, too. I don't want to lose Courier Journal. I don't want them to go away. So,
years.
I think there's the same thing that's pushing reporters into other jobs, into other fields, I think is also increasing the necessity for a lot of news organizations of people working on PR. Because, I mean, how often do you see that a lot of stories or a large content of or a large piece of news content will be just essentially statements from press releases that were sent out. A story that maybe while wholly accurate, if there's nothing, you know, like nefarious behind it, is just, you know, this announcement, you know, this is happening. Here's what this person says in a statement, and that's it. Rather than something that would, you know, otherwise maybe take a reporter a few hours to do the calls on and everything like that.
And I think that's why,
as the news staffs are shrinking, you.
But I think that's why you see a growth of online news sources in this community, particularly those that may not come through the traditional vein of journalism, and why they might be more necessary now than ever. Because as you see the more traditional journalists being chopped off, whether because of layoffs, too youthful, I guess, not having institutional memory that has been grown over the decades. But that's why you see, I think, inside of Louisville, let's be honest, the Ville Voice, even though Louisville Mojo didn't really last and work out that well, you know, LouisvilleKY.com.
But you start to see it in, you're seeing it now in larger and larger cities, and it's starting to move to smaller cities as well. And we're seeing some of it already in Louisville, this idea of people who have worked in journalism not wanting to go into public relations or not wanting to go into another field, starting up their own organizations.
Is that
like
work,
Terry did?
I mean, sure. In the long term, is that going to, I mean, we haven't seen, what we see now is TV stations, they have a website. FPL was a radio station, has a website. Couriers, a newspaper, has a website. We haven't seen one that's solely a website take off and take the lead. Do you think that's the future?
Yeah, when we figure it out, when we figure out how to push out information to people's smartphones, when we get every platform perfected, we'll be awesome, and we'll make a ton of money. You know, but the question becomes in the back of my mind is, will I get co-opted like everybody else? Because the Courier reporting's soft, because the Courier has to keep a relationship with the mayor. They're never going to do what you did. They're never going to call him out and ask him tough questions. Because
I think the Courier does.
Need
I think
sports.
I think the Courier
they
does.
Need
I think
access.
I'm going to push back.
To be fair, yeah,
I want to push back. I think the Courier does push back on the mayor's office. I think they do, and I think that it's. I think that there are elements of the Courier that are, quote unquote, soft. Sure, there are elements of the Courier Journal that aren't what they used to be. But I think that it's. It's an unreported story in this town that the Courier does go after the mayor's office. They do it. They do take on.
I
don't
think it's unreported.
They did the Tommy Elliott story.
Yeah, let's
they
be, let's be clear.
Story.
I mean, Dan Clubball has done the Metro Reporter for the Courier.
Right,
he's done
and it takes
really hard to do pieces.
I mean, in some respects, it only takes one
office.
Guy to do. I mean, one guy is doing it. So I think that I'm not going to sit here and apologize and say that Gannett hasn't done a lot of things that are a lot of negative things to the Courier. I'm not going to deny existence of corporate journalism. I just want to push
but
back.
But there is a relationship that people have over
and
the
when
years.
When you have the guy who used to be the reporter who covered the city, now he's the media person for the mayor, that's just untenable to me. And here's the thing. I suspect a lot of what Brookers did on MSD was fed to him by the mayor who wanted to get
rid of
it.
I don't know about that at all.
I've heard it from about 20 sources.
Well, that's fine. But, I mean, whatever. I think I can't.
It's awfully
cozy. I know journalists, and journalists don't think that way. They have relationships, but this isn't like Washington, D.C. and the Beltway coziness. We're not all going to charity balls together and going on each other's beach houses. The reporters of the Courier Journal are very aggressive. Debbie Yetter, Dan Kleppel, Andy Wolfson, Jason Riley. These are aggressive reporters who don't – yes, they have cordial relationships. They don't punch Chris Poyner in the face when they see him at a ball game. But at the same time, just because I return a guy's phone calls doesn't mean, quote unquote, I have a relationship.
Is this
with
access
him.
Jealousy?
It's,
I mean,
no.
Some people say maybe you're just upset. You're just upset.
Yeah,
hold
no
on.
Question. I'm never going
to
get.
Some people are saying that
they're
listen,
always
going
to go to the Courier
is because
the Courier has 130,000
subscribers. You're not
getting
the story, so therefore you're griping about it.
I'm not griping about it. It's the Judy Miller syndrome. It just is. And to prove me wrong, has the Courier done a hard-hitting journalism piece? Not in the last 20 years. Have they won a reporting award? Not in the last 20 years. And
they
what's
have.
The
they
correlation?
Won a they did win. They won
Gannett,
a they've won Polk Gannett Awards.
Gannett buys the Courier.
They won a Polk
the
Award.
The Courier turns into a Gannett newspaper. Well,
I think the Courier's done some good reports.
Jason Riley won a Polk Award about 5 years ago for his court reporting out in, I think, Bullitt County. First of all, this is not about awards, and you know that. But I'm not trying to push back on Terry. I think what Terry's doing is great. I think what you're doing, the more the merrier. I think more good sources of information.
I just want to push back a little bit. The only reason we've done as well as we have is because the Courier's so poor. If I would have been in New York or if I would have been in Chicago, I would have gotten crushed by
Gabe,
now.
Part of our pitches during the pledge drives is there's a gap.
There's a gap, but that's not saying that the things on either side of that gap are necessarily all bad because, you know, we look at Dan Klebel's coverage in the newsroom and he's doing really admirable coverage with a lot of stuff. And, you know, that's something that we follow, and we think he's doing a good job. But there are gaps. I don't think that anyone would argue that there isn't going to be some – that there haven't been and aren't going to be more changes in
what's being covered. I'm not saying Kleppel and Ott are awesome reporters. They'd be much better reporters if they worked at Gannett – didn't work at Gannett.
I'm not going to totally disagree with that. I think that there is an element of corporate journalism is not helping – the case. And I think that it's sad and it makes it pains me because I loved working at the Courier Journal, loved the people, but I just want to push back on the notion that there are good hardcore hardworking people down there trying to do their best under a bad situation
and they can't punish for it every day.
And they can't change the economic structure of this country. I mean, it's just this was a decision made by the corporations 30 years ago. This was the way they were going to go and look what's happened. You lost Knight Ridder. That's gone. That didn't work out. Tribune is on the ropes. I mean, the corporate journal is a model. It's like alarm going out. This is not working. But you know, they're sticking with it. So I don't know.
Well, guys, thank you very much for the spirited conversation. Terry Boyd from Insider Louisville, Thomas Nord, APCD, Gabe Buller, WFPL. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Bailey.
You.
We're here with Joe Sonka of Leo Weekly, and he's got a really interesting cover story this week. Joe, it's on Dismissed Charities, the Louisville Zoo, the mayor's office, all our favorite pals.
Yes, all of our favorite pals, especially Dismissed Charities, who volunteered that Leo is a piece of crap when we tried to get some answers.
Let's explain to the audience why they're saying that. Dismissed Charities, obviously, you've done a story in this week's cover of Leo. Dismissed Charities has put, I guess, violent offenders to work at the Louisville Zoo. How did you come about with this story?
I got a tip on that, and I did a little digging and found that there have been quite a few violent offenders, which is a total violation of city policy. Every city agency that uses the dismiss inmate workers, they're under the impression that they're getting no violent offenders, people for smaller offenses, smaller drug offenses. But what we found is there have been people convicted of first-degree assault, first-degree burglary, arson. All in the past 2 years, they've been employed at the Louisville Zoo, and apparently no one there was aware that this was happening.
Yeah, because I read your story, and it was interesting that in the midst of it, you know, Dismissed Charities, the Louisville Zoo, the mayor's office had an explanation on the front end, and as you were beginning to uncover more and more reading through the story, they're position sort of changed. It got even harsher. I think the Louisville Zoo came out with a much stronger statement than they initially gave you.
Yeah, Louisville Zoo initially said that the Dismiss program has been very beneficial to them and that, you know, they don't allow violent offenders. But once more and more names I kept digging up that had a violent offense and were there, and they also have a policy against people convicted of drug trafficking, and there have been at least five in the past 2 years, including two that currently work there. And eventually they came out with a strong policy, a strong statement saying that they're very upset with Dismiss for allowing this to happen and that they were going to look into their policy, as the city also said.
Now, what's the Fisher administration say about all this? I mean, they seem to be taken aback as well by the initial, I guess, discovery that violent offenders were being hired or at least working through Dismiss through the Louisville Zoo. What's their response now?
Well, they're upset that this happened, but there don't appear to be any plans to cut ties with Dismiss. And one of the benefits of
Dismiss, how does somebody have to explain that?
They said that this is just a couple incidences, and they've had hundreds of workers over the years without incident, and they've been able to use these workers for free, basically, in times of budgetary restraint.
Now, that's the question, I think, when your story raised that to me is the real crux of this matter. There certainly is the issue of violent offenders working, I think, at the Louisville Zoo, which is a sort of a family-oriented agency. That obviously raises some red flags for some people. But more than that is that these workers aren't being paid, are they? I mean,
no.
So we're talking about slave labor.
They're not being paid, and the Ask Me local 2629 really has a problem with that because they feel that they're using Dismiss labor instead of hiring more workers or maybe giving workers more hours.
Slave labor.
Well, you can use that word.
I will. I did. So, I mean, because I'm thinking to myself, reading the story, you know, the unions obviously have an issue with this. When you confronted that to the mayor's office, to the Fisher administration, what was their response?
Well, their response was that, you know, this is a program that works and it has for a long time, and they're not going to let these, you know, they rates that a couple incidences affect their policy. And they haven't even, I asked if they've spoken to Dismas since they've discovered this, and they've said that they hadn't even spoken to Dismas. So it doesn't look like there's going to be any change. And one of the most troubling things about this, it's one thing that violent offenders are allowed to work at the zoo, but there's no really strict supervision of these inmates for large periods of time.
Are these people who are released, are they still serving
time?
No,
these are still inmates. They aren't free people. They're still serving their term, and they are in the halfway house of Dismas, and then they go to the zoo to work every day. But I was there, I guess, a week before the story came out, and I was at a far corner of the zoo where one of the Dismas workers was mowing the lawn right next to the non-fenced backyard of a subdivision, and on the other side were three school buses full of children. And there wasn't an employee or a supervisor anywhere in the vicinity. So it's one thing that there might be some violent offenders slipping through the cracks here, but these workers aren't closely supervised the entire time they're there.
So now there are those who might say, Joe, listen, you got people who are working here. We're trying to help them. You know, this is what Dismas Charities is about. As you've obviously gotten some pushback from Dismas Charities on this story, mm-hmm. we're trying to reacclimate people into society. This is a program that has clearly shown some level and some rate of success.
Right.
As the mayor's office says, there's only been a few incidents. Why make a mountain out of a molehill?
Well, because the policy that the city has laid down is that there are no violent offenders here. Now, if people have served their term, obviously the people can decide whether to hire someone or not. But these are still inmates. And if the city has an agreement with an agency and think they're getting some kind of only certain kinds of people, then obviously, you know, someone's not following that policy. But until they've served out their prison term, they are still prisoners. And if you're going to allow them to work at a city agency, there needs to be some kind of supervision over them, or else you might get an incident, which happened at the Humane Society, where one of the Dismas workers who had a violent criminal past allegedly attempted to rape an employee there.
Is the mayor's office going to change the policy then? I mean, it would seem that either change the policy or I guess maybe explain why there's this exemption for Dismas. Obviously, you point out the issue with these people not being paid to mow the lawns and
right.
to do some of these groundkeeping work, and I'm assuming that's the sort of work that they're doing there. Is there any talk in the mayor's office about changing the policy?
I don't know if they're going to change the policy. I assume they're going to continue using Dismas workers. There may be some protocol or some change in policy where they do an additional background check instead of trusting that Dismas is only going to send them certain type of workers. There may be a call for an additional background check where the city can make sure that they're actually sending them the people that they assume they are sending.
Now, I'm thinking the state has to have an issue with this as well. I mean, you said you covered some people who were not being supervised at all. Is corrections concerned about this at all? I mean, the fact that you have a prisoner maybe somewhere where no one is looking and watching them what they're doing.
I would think that they would be concerned. There have been several inmates who have just walked off from Dismas and escaped, in the past few years. But part of the communication breakdown, I think, what's happening between the city and Dismas is that, for instance, the Louisville Zoo said that anyone who's termed community custody by the Department of Corrections, they take. But as the public information director at the Department of Corrections told me is that certain people who've had violent crimes or have had drug trafficking, at the end of their term, they can be termed community custody and deemed safe for reentry into society as long as they're strictly supervised. And apparently some people at the city or the zoo do not actually realize that these people who are deemed community custody could also be violent felons.
Joe Sonker from Leo Weekly. The story is Failsafe. Dismas Charities puts violent offenders to work at the zoo, raising questions about public safety. Joe, great story. Cover of Leo. Go pick it up, everyone. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Bill.
Noise and Notes is produced by WFPL. For more information, visit WFPL.org.